You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome back to Locked On Cavaliers. I'm Chris Manning, your host from ForTheSword.com and Forbes and a variety of other places. Joining me today from Early Bird Rights, Peachtree Hoops, a bunch of other places is Jeff Siegel. Jeff, what's going on, man?
I'm good. It's the off season. I'm just trying to get Early Bird Rights ready for the season. We've got some cool stuff coming out over the next couple months. So, you know, just fully into these kind of big projects that you can only really do during the offseason.
So just before we get into our topic today, which is going to be a pretty bleak topic, I would say, Jeff, can you just give everyone a primer on this new tool, this rotation builder tool that you have just debuted over at Early Bird Rights?
We just launched rotations, basically earlybirdrights.com/rotations. You can pick any of the 30 teams and you can sort of build your rotations. If you've ever played NBA 2K and like had your own team. I've never played, so I don't really know, but I've been told that basically you can make your own rotations where you sort of say this guy's going to play point guard for the first 7 minutes of the game, and then he's going to come out, and this guy's going to replace him at point guard and all that stuff. This is basically what that tool does, but you don't have to buy a $60 video game. You just have to have access to the internet, so it's a little bit better and easier to get to. The rosters are going to be updated just as bad as often as I update the salary cap sheet, so if you know how quick that is, then you understand sort of when trades happen, you're immediately going to be able to go in there and make a new rotation based on what you think that that team should do with their new players or whatever. And obviously right now with the offseason sort of just now wrapping up, we sort of have an idea of what these teams are going to look like, but there's lots of new people and on new teams, and you can sort of figure out what are these teams going to look like going forward. And I think it's a fun tool. I think a lot of people are having some fun with it during the offseason. And then during the season, of course, when there are trades and stuff like that, it'll be pretty useful for that purpose as well.
Yeah, so you can find the link to that down in the show notes. Check out everything Jeff does at Early Bird Rights. It's great. It's why it's a major reason why he's on this podcast so often. But so, Jeff, I just want to say, like, so I messaged you about recording over Labor Day weekend and asked you this specific topic, which is going to be the Cavs defense, why it was so bad last year, and why it's very, very, very likely that it's going to be atrocious next season. When I was like, hey, Jeff, let's talk about the Cavs defense, what was your initial reaction and what were you like?
I mean,
are you sure you want to talk about this?
I mean, it's always fun to talk about something that might be like historically awful, right? Like, we don't always get to talk about that stuff. Like, you know, how many times do the Cavaliers or really any team have a chance to like really set an NBA record? Obviously this is not a record you want to set, but they're still going to set it maybe during the season. I mean, they're going to be, if they're not historically bad, that's probably a win. Like if they're not the worst defensive team in NBA history, like that's probably like a positive outcome for them. And so, you know, it's going to be bad. It's going to be really, really ugly. There's going to be a lot of offense on both sides of the ball, and they're going to have to put together, you know, a top half of the league offense just to be competitive in a lot of these games.
So I'm going to guess that they're going to be bad. I don't know like how bad exactly this team is really going to be on the defensive end. It could be, you know, much worse. It could be, you know, about the same as they were last year. If you want to, I'm going to pull it up on NBA stats, but this, if I remember correctly, they were, like, according to the purely defensive rating, they were the worst defensive rating in the league last year. And that's, like, not a surprise. This is a team that I don't think had a lot of motivation to try and defense, which is always part of that equation. But to count down the five worst defensive teams in the league last year, the fifth worst was the New York Knicks with a defensive rating of 112.9. The Wizards were also 112.9. Then you had the Hawks, who you know very, very well from your work at Peach Troops, at 113.1. The Phoenix Suns, who are just atrocious, were at 114.2. The Cleveland Cavaliers at number 30 at 116.8. For context, the best defense in the league for the overall season, according to defensive rating, was the Milwaukee Bucks with a defensive rating of 104.9. There is a massive, massive gap between where the Cavs are at versus where they ended up. Looking at the, I'm going to try to pull up for the entire season, but or after the All-Star break, just to kind of put that in context and see if they were any better. I don't think they were. They're actually even worse after the All-Star break at 117.7, with some of the other teams fluctuating there. So bad defensive team. Even if they were a little better overall after the break, just this was a historically bad defensive team. And when you look at the roster, I look at last year's roster when David Nwaba, who I really like and I think will be useful in Brooklyn, is your best defender. I think that tells you just there are going to be limits. When Larry Nance is like your second best defender, I think that shows you some limits. I would just say off the top of my head, like thinking about it, there's probably like three guys that were on the Cavs last year that I think were good defenders. I thought Jaron Blossom game has the potential to get there. David Nwaba should be maybe a third defender or like fourth defender on a good team. He shouldn't be your primary lockdown guy, even if he's very good on that end of the floor. There was not really a scheme. I don't think there was a coherent vision for the defense last year, and that contributes to it too. There's just like nothing about that roster either that just said like, hey, like this team, even if they're going to suck, they're going to be passable on defense. Like we've seen some other teams can at least muddle together a decent defense with the Cavs. There was no path to that last year.
Yeah, I mean, and it's going to be – maybe it's not going to be like just as bad. But like you could make an argument that it's going to be worse. I mean, the lineups that they're going to run out there, you know, David Nwaba's maybe replaced with Zendarius Thornwell, who, you know, Nwaba's probably better defensively than Thornwell is. Not by a ton. Like Thornwell hangs his hat on the defensive side, but how often is he really going to play? You're going to run into a lot of the same issues as Nwaba did, where the offense takes so much off the table that it's hard to get that guy in consistently for big minutes. You know, Larry Nance is still the guy in the middle. Kevin Love hopefully will be back healthy, but of course he's not, you know, not fantastic defensively. Jordan Clarkson is still on this team. You know, Sexton and Garland are like the two lead guards, and neither one of them are going to be positive impacts on that side of the floor. I mean, they're really in a spot where they were historically bad last year, and like they didn't really, not a whole lot has changed over the summer to make me think that they're going to be, you know, much better. Particularly when you look at what some of the other teams at the bottom did that, you know, should elevate their work on the defensive end. You know, Phoenix should be a little bit better. Ricky Rubio is going to be the point guard. You know, he's, you know, that should just help them at the point of attack, you know, pretty consistently. New York added a bunch of veterans, not a whole lot of like defensive veterans, but it's still, you know, it's better to have veterans than rookies, guys, you know, or younger guys like Sexton and, you know, even Jetty Osman. You know, they've got some guys who have defended well in the past, you know, like Taj Gibson and stuff like that. Washington, of course, is going to be, you know, really bad on that end. Atlanta is going to be really, really bad on that end. You know, Chicago got better. Minnesota should be slightly better. You know, they've got, like, the teams around them are also going to be, for the most part, a little bit better, other than really Washington and Atlanta. And Cleveland didn't do a whole lot to make themselves better on that end of the floor. I think they should be better offensively. I think that's where they can sort of make up for some of that difference rather than being, you know, about 25th in offense last year. Maybe they can jump up and get to, you know, the top 20. That would be really helpful in terms of them just, you know, winning games and trying to put some good performances together on the floor. But defensively, I mean, certainly that this is going to be pretty much just a train wreck.
Okay, so when you look at the scheme last year, it's a lot of man defense. There was some hedging on pick and rolls, some dropping depending on who was there, but I don't think it was cohesive. They ran some zone. From what you just kind of remember about the Cavs defense last year, do you think I'm being fair to Mike Longobardi and the staff that is, you know, largely no longer with the team, that there wasn't really, you know, a vision for the defense last year, even considering the roster fluctuations and stuff like that? But do you find that to be a fair assessment?
I mean, I bet they had a vision, but
right.
Like,
But I mean, it's just like, I don't feel like when I watched them and went back and watched stuff that there was like, okay, here's the couple of things we're going to hang our head on that end. Like when I watch Atlanta, it's like, okay, I feel like I knew what they were trying to do. When I watched the Cavs, I didn't feel like there was anything consistent that was like, these are our tendencies to kind of make things kind of work.
Yeah. And that may have been because they weren't able to execute anything. So they were just grasping at straws. And so it makes it sort of, I don't know this, but it sort of makes it look like that the coaching staff doesn't have like a thing that they want the guys to do. And that, you know, maybe that would have gotten better if they had stuck to one thing for, you know, all 6 months of the regular season. Maybe by the fourth, fifth, sixth month, they would have finally, you know, figured it out. But, you know, you, like we just talked about, the personnel is not cohesive in any way. The personnel is not good on that end of the floor. And so if they had a defensive scheme that they came into the season with, and then they got, you know, killed for the first month or so, then they, you know, start to change things up. They start to experiment. They start to go, okay, can we find anything that works with this group? And, you know, when you're playing a lot of, you know, Colin Sexton and Jordan Clarkson, and even like Larry Nance is fine, but not great. Like they had nobody on that end who was, you know, really, really, really good, who could really bolster their overall defense in a way that could at least give them an overarching sort of theme to their defense. Like if you have a very good defensive center, you can get away with pretty much everybody else being bad as long as that center is really good. And Larry Nance is, I don't think he's, you know, in the 10th percentile among centers, but he's not above average, I wouldn't say. I think he's, you know, maybe in that, you know, 35th to 40th percentile, and they didn't have, you know, enough confidence in him that he could really, you know, run the defense from the back line. And so they had him hedging a little bit. They had him dropping a little bit. They played a little bit of zone, like you said, like they were sort of all over the place when he was on the floor. And then of course they didn't have anybody really at the point of attack other than Nwaba. And so it just, you end up trying to grasp at straws and go, okay, let's try this tonight. Let's try that tonight. And it looks like it's an inconsistent mess. And that's more, I think that might have more to do with the personnel than the coaching staff.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back with more Locked On Cavaliers. You can, again, find Jeff on Twitter at JG Siegel. And again, check out all of the great podcasts in the Locked On Network. You have Locked On Browns, Locked On Indians, and the Browns season starts up next week. You're going to want to listen to everything Jeff Floyd doing, because that dude is a freaking machine when he records podcasts. But we're going to be right back. 3, 2, 1. Okay, Jeff. When you look at this roster, here are the guys that I think are currently, I would say, good defenders. I think Kevin Love can be like passable when he's like trying. I'm not going to put a ton of effort into this vibe from him when he was playing last year. I think Nance is solid. I think there's stuff that he does. He's limited as a rim protector, and I think that limits his effectiveness on that end, but I think he's switchable. I think he's at least passable. I think Thornwell's good. I think like he's a little different than Nwaba, but I think he's like just flat out a good defender. I think he's the best defender on the roster right now, and he should make the team for that reason alone. I think a healthy Tristan Thompson is good. We just need to see if he's going to be healthy and how he's used. And I think Jetty Osman could be good. His RPM would suggest that he's atrocious. I don't think he benefited from the types of guys he was asked to defend last year. That's kind of it for me right now. And I think Delly like is – will at least try, and if he's healthy, he should be a little bit better than he was last year. But that's kind of it. I do not see like a clear path to this team being improved. And like, I want, you know, I think JB Bickerstaff's going to have a lot of influence on the defense from my understanding of the coaching staff and Beilein's. You know, I think Forte is firmly in the offensive side, but he'll have some input. What they kind of do on the defensive end to me is going to be really, really interesting, just because if they want to be like better or a little more functional, there has to be something there that they do that's different. And I just think, look at the roster personnel and also just who they drafted in Garland, in KPJ, and in Windler. It's not like they drafted like Feibel and were like, okay, we at least got one guy who's like going to be a good defender. They drafted guys who were projects on the defensive end, frankly. So I don't know what the path to improvement really is.
Yeah, I mean, projects might be even sort of a kind term for it. Like Matisse Thibault is more of a project in that, like, he might be good initially, but he, you know, came out of a zone but at Washington, and you could see eventually he might be a high-end defender. And so you could put resources into trying to develop him into a high-end defender. The three guys they drafted in Garland, Windler, and Porter Jr., like, those guys are not – if you can – get those guys to be like average at their positions defensively, like that means like that is turning an average guy into being elite. And like, that's the sort of thing that we're talking about with those guys. Sexton is kind of falls into the same camp. I liked him a little bit more on the defensive end out of college than what he showed last year, but obviously he had, you know, just such a huge load offensively last year with Love sort of, you know, in and out of the lineup, and they just they threw a lot at Sexton last year that I think he didn't show as much on the defensive end as he could maybe in a two-guard system with Garland. Now that Love is back, there's more offensive outlets so that he can put in more energy on the defensive end. But he was, you know, downright awful last year. And awful in like the some of the ways he was awful was like the effort stuff where he just didn't have the energy to do it. And some of it was just like he has no idea what he's doing out there. And, you know, so the guys who are going to play a lot and the guys who they're building this team around moving forward are not good defenders. Like, they're just not. And you know, Love can be good when he's locked in certain situations, but, you know, can you really rely on him to be locked in on a team that's, you know, probably the worst in the league, maybe the second worst if Atlanta, you know, really falls apart. Washington, obviously, if they trade Bradley Beal, could really, really fall apart. Like, but we're talking about one of the three or four worst teams in the league. Is Love really going to lock in on the defensive end, or is he going to, you know, take it easy and play offense and try to, you know, up his stock so that he can get traded and he can get to a better situation? I don't know, you know, where he's going to come in mentally from an effort perspective. You know, Tristan Thompson, like you said, he's their best big man defender, but how much is he really going to play? Like, is he going to be able to stay healthy? Is he their third big, or is it, you know, maybe it's John Henson or somebody like that? Like, I don't know, you know, Ante Zizic obviously is still on this team as well. So, you know, Thompson, if he's not healthy, maybe he falls out of the rotation sort of as a favor to some of the younger guys to get them development time. That's going to hurt the defense. You know, there's just a lot going on with on the defensive end where there's just not a whole lot of positives to be seen.
I really wonder also just like, I don't feel like I have a good idea of like what Bickerstaff's kind of MO is, just because like what he came from in Memphis and when he was a head coach there and going back to Houston too, I guess, if you want, I think he had Dwight Howard there. He had sort of a traditional five to kind of block things up. And I don't think the Cavs have that, you know, like, I don't think they have, like, obviously they don't have anyone the caliber of Marc Gasol or even I think probably Houston Dwight Howard. I would have to kind of look at the numbers and film to kind of sort of know that. But like, I don't quite know how, I do not quite know exactly like how we're going to see stuff from Memphis translate here either. And then I think the other reason that makes this sort of hard to project is like, there's just like the college game's just different more. I think the defensive side is just more of a mystery for Beilein. There's not like a consistent data on what kind of defenses his Michigan teams had really. When you look through KenPom, you know, you look at like Bickerstaff, like, I just don't know what he's going to kind of do. You look at the other assistants, like, you know, Antonio Lang comes from Utah. He had Rudy Gobert. Like, there's the thrill line of big guy, but, like, that big guy isn't on the roster now. And, like, Tristan can probably do that to some extent, and I think Nance can do it to some extent. But, you know, again, does, in particular, Tristan get flipped? Like, do they want to play Zizic? Do they, like, are those guys going to be healthy? Like, I don't know. And I think those are like really kind of complicated things.
Yeah. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I think a lot of the like you said, the defensive assistants had bigger guys in their past and they had the big guy in the middle who they could sort of around whom they can build that defense. The, you know, Memphis with Marc Gasol, Dwight Howard was still good. I think in Houston, obviously he had his, you know, personality conflicts and the offensive conflicts, but you know, on the defensive end, they were solid. You know, and Rudy Gobert, of course, has in Utah. And so, you know, they don't have that centerpiece that who is going to sort of hang back and protect the paint. They have, you know, some capable switchers on this team, especially like Lance, you know, Nance and Love. If Love is sort of locked in, he can switch a little bit on the perimeter. Tristan Thompson, back when he was, you know, fully Tristan Thompson, was, you know, a very, very capable switch defender. You know, a very capable blitz defender as well. Maybe that's something that they can look into, but it's not something that we've necessarily seen a ton of from their coaching staff in the past. And so, you know, how they decide to go into that, you know, into the defensive, into their defensive playbook and which, you know, which scheme they decide to go with, or if they decide to sort of, you know, something similar to last year where they try lots of different things and hope that they can figure one out that works. And, you know, maybe they, you know, talk to some of the guys from last year, talk to Nance in particular, and see like, okay, this is you played, you know, 10 or 15 different schemes last year. Which one do you think did you like the best? Which one did you feel the most comfortable with? Maybe they start there. Like, there's just so many unknowns, and there, you know, what they can do versus, you know, what they will do is, you know, somewhat different. Perhaps they want to, you know, hang Larry Nance back and have him play at the rim. That might not be best, but, you know, based on his skill set. So it's, there's so many unknowns. And it, the only thing we really seem to know is that they just don't have the personnel to play a lot of different schemes well, like, and they just don't have the personnel to play the most conservative sort of base scheme that you see a lot of teams play, where everybody drops back and you try to, you know, protect the rim as much as possible. And so they just, I don't know that it matters that much what kind of, you know, defensive scheme they run, only because once they are good again, they're going to have different personnel on this team to defend. And then at that point, that's when you can sort of implement the defensive scheme that actually makes sense. And so, you know, if you have Sexton and Garland chasing over screens and forcing guys to the rim, but there's not a whole lot of great rim protection there, are they going to learn how to do that at a high level versus if they had a really good defensive center back there? I don't know if that's worth the sort of development time to work on them, to work with them on that particular skill, when they can work on so many different other things and they can really hang their hat on offense during this rebuilding phase and then get back to the defense eventually.
So I also think, just with all the young guys, they probably do need to keep things kind of simple.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a ton of sense. Like, the simpler it can be on both ends of the floor, you know, the better it's going to be for the rookies. You know, long-term building an offense based around simple things, you know, they would want to amp, you know, they're going to want to ramp up the complications eventually, especially for the guards making reads and stuff like that. You would want to, you know, ramp it up and really use, try to unlock the pair of them. If they're going to play, you know, if they look long-term and they want Sexton and Garland to be their guys offensively, they can do a lot with that, but both guys are going to need to be smart. Both guys are going to need to, you know, move off the ball really well, move off of each other, play without the ball in their hands pretty often. And so, you know, that's going to be something that they're going to need to work on. I think that's something that they can sort of get started on this year during this, you know, downturn for the team. They can sort of get started on looking toward that eventual future where both guys are shooters, both guys can move off the ball, both guys can handle the ball, and both guys can sort of play off of each other in the best, and get the best out of guys defensively, as simple as they can make it. If they want to just chase over every screen, that's fine. If they want to switch as much as they want, you know, as much as they can, that's not going to work, but it's fine. Like, I think as much simplicity as they can on the defensive end to help them focus offensively would make a lot of sense.
All right, we're going to take one more break, and then we're going to be back to kind of look at some of the workarounds the Cavs could kind of use to figure this out. But if you haven't already, you should check out the Locked On NBA show from the Locked On Network. So Monday through Friday, you're going to have great insight into the whole league. You got Ben Golliver and Sam Amick on the show during the week as well. So you're going to get their national great insight. I always love listening to Ben talk with Wes Goldberg and David Ramil on Tuesday. So go check out Locked On NBA, and we're going to be right back. 3, 2. All right, Jeff, last thing. What do you think are some workarounds for the Cavs, let's say, not building a crappy not a non-crappy defense, but like just being passable enough so at least like there's some, they can have, they're not just such a liability, and then like they're going to be bad. Let's just assume they're going to be bad. But what do you think are some of the ways they can at least try to mitigate that and at least kind of keep things not like give themselves chances to win some games because of their defense, like at least just not be completely blown out all the time?
I mean, I think the best way that they can do that might not be what's best for sort of the long-term health of the franchise, and that would be play the veterans more, play Dellavedova more, Thornwell, you know, to try to get him on the floor defensively, you know, put those guys out there with Osman and with, you know, Larry Nance at the four, maybe with Tristan Thompson, and really go, you know, go a little bit bigger with Nance and Thompson. Let Nance be sort of more of a roaming shot blocker rather than like a pure rim protector. You know, you can be aggressive with both of those guys defensively. You know that, you know, Dellavedova is going to fight on that end of the floor. You know, Thornwell can play multiple positions. You hope that, you know, Jetty Osman can play multiple positions. Obviously that five-man unit doesn't include a lot of the young guys that they're trying to develop. It includes none of the three rookies. It doesn't include Sexton. That's, you know, so those kinds of lineups are going to be good for them defensively, but how much do you want to go into that versus, you know, really just sink their teeth in to the development and understand that they're going to be really, really bad on that, on defense, and just understand like that the expectations are that they're going to be really bad, and just know that, you know, they're going to, it's going to be bad, and they just need to put, you know, a lot of their, a lot of their focus on the offensive end and try to mitigate as much of the defensive problems as they can just by being as good as they can offensively. I think if that, if they want to go the more developmental route, that makes a lot of sense, that they just, they're not going to be good there if they're going to play young guys. And so if they want to go that route, I think that makes the most sense for their long-term future. Obviously, coaches don't always think about the long-term future, you know, especially an older coach like Jim Beilein. Like, does he come in and sort of think like, you know, I got to perform immediately, we need to sort of start winning some games. Then he relies more on the veterans, and you see, you know, some issues with their long-term plan there. So, you know, I just depends on sort of what their overall vision is. They have enough decent defenders to build a rotation that has mostly pretty decent defenders on it, but I don't think that that's necessarily something that they should want to do or will want to do going into this season.
What do you think about leaning on zone a little bit more? Because I kind of think that's a way you could keep things simple. Maybe not run it all the time. Maybe not like make that the core of what you're going to do. Because I don't know how much that trend's going to continue to be a thing. But what would you think of leaning on zone a little bit? So maybe you run zone like a fourth of the time, right? And like it kind of allows guys like Evan Porter Jr. and Sexton and these guys that are going to struggle on that end to just be kind of keep things simple. They get to maintain a zone. I'll be curious to see. I actually feel like I should have asked Sexton that last year because they did use zone a little bit, but I'm curious about sort of how that could factor into this and what Beilein thinks of that. Cause it's just, again, it's just not in his MO. And I don't think Bickerstaff was like necessarily around when that was kind of becoming like an in vogue kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, the best zones have guys who can basically guard 1 through 5 at every position and can really, because you're not controlling the matchups in any way in a zone. And so you need, especially the top two guards, if you're going to play like a 2-3 zone, need to be lengthy. They need to be smart. They need to sort of understand the angles and understand what teams are trying to do against a zone offensively. And, you know, are Garland and Sexton any of those things? Like, they're not long athletic guards who can get in passing lanes and really bother, you know, guards on in pick and roll or whatever. It's not, you know, neither one of them are necessarily high end, you know, basketball IQ wise. They're not going to be, you know, real smart in terms of knowing where to be in a zone. You know, I think given how bad Sexton was just defensively in their base scheme last year, I think just keeping it as simple as possible and going, okay, this is our pick and roll coverage. We're going to play this way every single time. And if throwing in a zone just throws in complications for him that may not work, you know, and just may confuse him more than anything else. And so, you know, I would worry about that from a personnel perspective. I would worry about that from a, you know, from a basketball IQ perspective for Sexton in particular. For Garland, you know, I assume just based on what we've seen from him at the high school and college level, that he's not going to be, you know, high end on that end of the floor either. And he doesn't have, you know, the length and the sort of athleticism to be, you know, a high end zone defender. So I don't know that zone would work. I think maybe it's something that they go to as something that they try, as something that they just sort of introduce. Like, we're going to play a little bit of zone just to get the guys used to it, even if it's going to be really, really bad. That's sort of where I would, you know, come down on it. I mean, you see the teams who play a lot of zone have a lot of similarly sized athletic players. You saw that from Toronto. You saw that from Miami. You saw that from Brooklyn. You even saw a little bit of that from, like, the New York Knicks. I mean, at least they had, like, Dennis Smith and Frank Ntilikina at the top, you know, playing as the guards in that zone. You know, the Cavaliers don't have those kinds of athletic defenders at the top of the zone, and so I don't think that a zone would work. I don't think that they should play a zone with the expectation that it will be better than their regular defense. But if they wanted to introduce it as a developmental concept, I wouldn't be opposed to that.
Yeah, that's where I think it makes the most sense. I just don't know. I also just like don't know like what the – I don't know if there is a path for like this collection of guys to be good on defense. Like I just don't know if there's one – if there's like a way for this team to actually build and do that with this collection of talent. And that's like one of, I think, the bigger concerns about this roster. Cause it's like, if I look at like Memphis, for example, like John Morant, like may never be a good defender, but they have Jaren Jackson Jr. Brandon Clark should be a good defender. Like they have other guys that should be good on that end. Atlanta is doing something very cohesive where Atlanta did stuff where it's like, we're going to surround Trae Young, who's awful on defense, with guys that are long and switchable and like can help cover for him. The Cavs are just like, we're going to get dudes who can put the ball in the hoop. Like there's just like not – defense is just not – does not seem to be part of the vision, which I think can be fine if you think you can teach it. But we just – I need to, like 3 years of data to know if that's true.
Yeah, and I think you can – it's a lot easier to teach a bad defensive player to be passable than it is to teach a bad offensive player to be passable offensively. That's the biggest, that's the bet that they're making. And historically, that's been correct. You can always, if you're good at development, you know, developing defensive players, you can take bad defensive players and make them passable. You still need, obviously, some high-end pieces, particularly at the center position. But you can deal, you can work with guys like Garland and Windler and Porter Jr. and Sexton on the perimeter and make those guys good enough. But you take, you know, even a guy like Sindarius Thornwell, who's good defensively but takes a lot off the table offensively, there's a reason that guy is not getting paid $10 million a year. He's on a minimum contract. It's the same reason like Dorian Finney-Smith in Dallas gets paid $4 million. Because he's very good defensively, but guys who are good defensively and bad offensively are not high-value players, whereas the opposite is those guys are high-value players. So if they take these, you know, three rookies this year and Sexton as the sophomore and just hope like hell that two of those guys are really high-end offensive players, they can figure the rest out later. But if you take a bunch of defenders, you're always going to be trying to catch up on offense, and I think I think the bet that they're making is smart, even if it's going to be really, really ugly for the first couple of years.
Last thing, is there any kind of defensive trend you're kind of looking at to see if we see this, either with the Cavs or other NBA teams in the next year?
I mean, the advent of zone, the advent of more creative defensive schemes, you know, we saw the sort of box in one or triangle in two from the Raptors in the finals. I'm not sure that that's going to be some sort of widespread thing, but of course, like that's interesting. It's interesting that teams are trying new things from that arena. I like the sort of the idea behind what a lot of sort of European teams have done over the World Cup and plus just European club teams as well. A lot of sort of off ball switching, a lot of stuff in pick and roll where the guy guarding the ball handler in pick and roll will switch off to the corner, and it's sort of this three man switch in pick and roll, especially. I think that's something that is interesting. I think it's something that as the NBA becomes a lot more homogenous and a lot of guys are, you know, a lot of teams are going for guys from 6'6 to 6'10 who can do everything. The more of those guys are in the league, the more creative you can get defensively because you're not tied to certain matchups. You're not like, oh, this guy cannot guard on the perimeter because everybody can guard everywhere. And so I think that's going to be really interesting from a defensive perspective over the next few years as the league becomes more, you know, more 6'6 to 6'10 guys who can do everything. You can see a lot more creative defensive schemes because you can switch anything and everything, and you can really, you know, become a lot more creative in terms of how you switch and when you switch and exactly, you know, what paths you make the ball go based on where your defense is.
You can find Jeff on Twitter at JG Siegel. Again, check out Early Bird Rights. Check out his writing there. Check out all the stuff he's doing there. Check out him at places like Peachtree Hoops as well. Jeff, as always, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.